Angelo Cerbi at the Torino Film Festival for Fred Film Radio. We are here. My guest today is Goyo Anshu from Argentina. Hello, yes. Goyo, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And you are here with your film Heterophobia in the section Onde. Well, your film is quite something, you know. It's kind of demanding and fascinating at the same time. And I have plenty of questions for you today. Oh, cool. So if you're ready, we can start.
You watched it yesterday?
No, I watched it actually on a link they sent me because it was impossible for me to, because there were overlapping screens and stuff. Well. But I watched it on a big screen, so it was nearly the same thing that I watched in the cinema. Let's talk about the issue first, and then we move on the aesthetics. Your movie is basically a story of this gay guy that is like used and then discarded by this so-called straight friend, and he has to reconsider all his thoughts about connecting with people, loving and relationship and stuff. And he went through a kind of a journey that led him, luckily, to a kind of epiphany and finding love again. But it's not that easy, as I said it, because the movie is not a regular narrative movie, it's not a documentary, it's a kind of...
A mix.
So can you tell us something about how did you get with this story, and how did you thought to use it, the media of the cinema, in the way you did?
Well, it is a whole story of the history of the movie. The script, the original script was somehow much more conventional than what the final movie is. It was a very conventional script, but not as conventional as to be institutionally financed, mm-hmm. as it has to be with every film in Argentina. There are credits and subsidies by the state, yeah. And with the people that judges if something is worth it or not, or if something is narratively good enough or not. And well, I had written this script over several years of work, and one friend who was an insider one day told me, come on, Gosho, this will never happen, your story is just too weird for them. So I put it in a box and for a while, and several years later, when I got fired from the Film Institute, I was working at the film festival, and I was without a job. I was kind of blacklisted. Also, I had a documentary that was blacklisted from the official cinemas.
Really? Wow.
Yes. It was a huge quarrel I had with people that became very powerful afterwards. So I was in serious trouble, and I was my friends then said not that a movie would never happen because it was too weird. Your film career would never happen because you fuck it so wrong that nobody will ever give you any chance to have some credit or subsidy at the Film Institute. So I was in that point in my life when I was that bad and ran out of money. Mm. And so it was then that I decided to take out the script from the box and film it with no money and no future and nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. And with nothing to lose, I went to the streets with some with some landed cameras, very, very low-fi equipment, and no pocket money. The only money that that we spent was like 40 euros because we broke lock at a dangerous neighborhood at 4 a.m. in the morning. And so done in that circumstances that somehow original script that was kind of a mainstream script was modified according to the financial circumstances, and we were searching for the way to narrate this story with the few elements we had and the liberty that gave us that we had nothing to lose. So we were searching, and
then you ended with this.
And we ended with this, that it is a mix. I said it is a mix because it is not like a whole film, like a narrative film. It is a mix between a narrative film, poetry, video art.
Mm, exactly.
Acid prop.
Yeah.
So it's like when you have nothing to lose, you just don't follow the rules and create your own path.
Actually, it is. We can say that it's a narrated film because there's everything that I told was the plot is narrated by this all off voice that tells us exactly what were the feeling of Mariano, which is the new character.
A rhymed voice, because it is rhymed.
Yeah, exactly, I know. And it's male and female, because it will change between male and female. And this is very compelling, but could be very risky in terms of keeping the audience watching it, because you know, because the voiceover normally is kind of is tiring people more than a regular watch.
It is, it is normally what they tell us at this at the film school never to do. But the point is that we didn't have money for microphones.
I mean, it wasn't. So I mean, mine was not criticism. It was just an objective point of view. But that could that you couldn't. Use because I mean you had another idea in mind, you have another project in mind, and the product, if we can call it that way, that came out is completely different from anything else.
We were open to change, and it means some may say it is an experimental film, but I discussed the notion of experimental film because an experimental form happens at a laboratory. And this form that is weird, I prefer to call it dissident, because it doesn't happen at a laboratory. It is not produced at a laboratory in aseptic conditions.
Oh, yeah.
It is produced in the streets. So it is more like a dissident language made from the outside of everything.
Yeah.
From the outside
but we can call it an experimental film in terms of visuals, in terms of aesthetics, because it's very close to what we were taught to label an experimental movies from the 70s on, you know?
Yeah.
Because you mix images and the drawings, graphics,
YouTube downloading.
Exactly.
A lot of YouTube downloading.
And then that raw quality of the image with that is not clear is there's always a color filter on it. So you use a lot of aspects that could make this movie experimental in terms of aesthetics.
In terms of what it was used to be called experimental during the 1970s. Mm. But between the 1970s and the 2010s that we are now, a lot of things happened. And what happened with the experimental film or the cultural camp that gave birth to experimental film? I think that the way of trying to tell a story that we were doing that with heterophobia has more things in common with the guerrilla movements in Latin American filming in the 1960s with the cinema novo of Glauber, the notion that the only thing you need in order to produce a film is a camera in your hand and an idea in your head. And then you will find a language to fit that circumstance.
The circumstances,
and, even a language that will, from that extreme poverty conditions, get away from the naturalistic representation of reality, that is somehow associated with that production conditions, and to get into the realm of dreams and of the visions of the mind.
I want to ask you one thing about the issue, because there is you talk of patriarchs in your movie a lot.
In terms of a
power scale in the society, what the people with more power have to rule those who have less power, and if you're one of the less power, you can only stay there, because this is what the straight guy tells to Mariana.
And
it's a kind, there's this kind of macho conception of who rules and who follows, even in their sexual relationships and in sentimental relationships, which is what Mariana at the very end discovered that it's not true, because he finds a guy that is no macho and no patriarch for him, and he's no patriarch for this guy either. So is this something very rooted in your culture that you needed to point this out so strongly?
The heteronormative rules are rooted, I guess, in the culture of the whole world, more in the Latin countries, the countries influenced by the Vatican, of course.
You tell us. I mean, you're in Italy, so we know
that's
it.
That's the watchdog of the heteropatriarchate. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big enemy we have. A big enemy. Beautiful churches, but rotten minds.
you're right, actually.
Yes, I've seen a lot of beautiful churches today. But the heteronormative world, the whole world is ruled by the heteronorms. And I think that the only way for heteropatriarchate to consider another person that it is not a heteropatriarch, an equal to him, is to rewrite the constitution, destroy the society, and build a new one. I mean, you have to go to the very root itself of society. That's why the reforms doesn't go deep enough. The only way to make it an equal society is to embrace a gender revolution. I mean, a revolution is something very difficult to see it happen. I don't know. I mean, I say, let's embrace a gender revolution. It would be great that it would happen. I don't know that if would ever happen, but the only way for a person that is not an heteropatriarchate to embrace its own life without self-hatred is to live his life in a revolutionary way, to embrace revolution, to fight against that norms. And that is what happens to the character.
Yeah, which actually at the end of the movie, he did this. He started this revolution inside of him, and in the very little circle of his life and of his mind. So it started there. So it would be maybe some little revolution in for each every person that would create like the big one, the bigger one. We'll see.
The revolution comes from inside to evolve from the self-hatred that produces in anyone that it is not an heteropatriarch. And who is an heteropatriarch? Because I am sure that every macho guy that is around there circling and boasting about his virility is so tragically afraid that anyone would notice that in the inside he is not that macho.
Exactly.
And that
I'm pretty sure that
the more
you show it off, the more you are confused.
Yeah, so it is like a society based in self-hatred and guilt, and oh, that's so horrible, and that's why we have to fight so much against it.
Okay, Gojo, thanks a lot for your movie and thanks a lot for having been with us.
Okay.
Gojo Hanchur, director of Veterophobia. Angela Cherubi from the Torino Film Festival for Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.